With Spring Black Friday deals at the Home Depot, you can give your lawn or garden beds a pop of color and protection. Right now, get a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10. Help your soil retain moisture longer with color that lasts up to 12 months. Shop Spring Black Friday deals for a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Color selection varies by store. Limit 60 bags per customer while supplies last.
Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants, price may vary.
Welcome to this free episode of Dunked On. Nate and Danny go over the worst contracts in the NBA. And by the time you finish listening to this, you might be curious, what are the best contracts in the NBA? If you want to listen to that podcast, subscribe to Dunked On Prime. We've got that version ad-free, dunkedon.supportingcast.fm.
Feels like it's been so long since we discussed. Is this one of our favorite topics? I don't know. It's one that's going to be difficult to parse this year because we have a number of interesting situations. We have more extensions than basically we've ever had in the Dunked On era that are coming online. Big stuff out there for sure. And then we also have, though, the rising cap environment. And frankly, we also have a period where having cap space isn't really that valuable. So, hey, if you're paying some guy $4 or $5 million extra, like, does that really matter that much? As long as you're not just running into the tax and if you're not like a super competitive team or I think this is going to be really interesting to go through and discuss what we think are the worst contracts in the NBA, given this new context that I think is somewhat unique since we started doing this list back in 2015.
It is bizarre. I think the closest that we've probably come is 2015, where at that point, you know, we knew there was a cap spike coming and we had an idea of where things were. And we don't know if the coming one is going to be nearly as extreme because both sides have learned lessons from that. And I think that there are a couple of different elements of this that are important to get out there at the beginning. And one of those is, generally speaking, and there will be, we'll talk about it a little bit, is that the way you and I have done this over the years has been kind of ranking these to the extent that we'll rank them in order of how far underwater they are. And this is not about a bad player gets $10 million. Well, if a bad player gets $10 million and it's an expiring contract, then it's a maximum of $10 million underwater, unless they are a truly destructive player that the team has to play. So that means smaller contracts, it's harder for them to be as destructive. And then the other extremely important one of those is that, remember, we're recording this in December. That means the offseason is already done. So contracts that are set to expire this league year, shout out Russell Westbrook, are not that destructive because teams have already done the primary business they're going to do. Free agents have signed, trades have happened. And so the idea that those, like the damage that those contracts have done is largely already in the past. And so for me, at least, those contracts can be real bad. There are plenty of them that are, but they're not going to be among the worst contracts in the league because they just aren't impacting teams negatively from this point forward that much.
Yeah, that's very reasonable to think about. And I think one of the other things that I even ran into this with best contracts in the NBA as well is just, man, these go out really far. And it's just so hard to know how these are going to turn out. And a lot of these deals, when we think of best contract, worst contract, you might say, hey, you know what? Like this deal, this guy produced for 2 years and then he had 3 years of just absolute shit production. It was just a useless $45 million on our books at the end. But hey, we made it to the conference finals in the first 2 years because we had this guy on our team. And if we didn't pay him this contract, he wouldn't have been on our team for that period. So I think one of the things you really have to focus on in some ways is the team that the guy is on, how much he's helping them. Like Klay Thompson, I think, is a good example of this, right? Like, Sure. Clearly not $40 million worth of production, but he's also on a team that's a championship contender and he's contributing for them. So, like, that has to go into the analysis. as opposed to Gordon Hayward just printing Michael Jordan's money for a team that's going to be like deep into the lottery again. And the initial signing made no sense. It just like there's no reason for this guy to be making this money on this team. So I do think I'm going to be a little bit more context specific there. In addition, obviously, to the how far underwater is it? You know, what would the guy be? What would this guy's production actually be worth versus what's he getting paid? That's obviously the biggest component. But hey, if it leads to the decision to have this guy in your roster, it's like help if this guy at this price is helping you achieve your goal as a team, I'm willing to be more lenient.
And your goal isn't making the play.
Yes, fair enough, and
I will note that we're in an unusual place. So you brought up the idea of involving that context, and I think that's completely fair. I will also say that as we do in other contexts, like rankings and everything else, I evaluate from this point forward. So the past matters. That's part of how we evaluate these players. And so you brought up the idea of like a contract having surplus value at the front and then negative value at the back. More common in baseball contracts, we're in their hot stove right now, but also very prevalent in basketball contracts. Jimmy Butler is probably a really good example here. And I, generally speaking, I'm not going to count in terms of how good or bad the contract is, what they do, but oftentimes those players, like you brought up Klay Thompson, he was an important part of the Warriors championship team last year. He is an important part of their team this year, wherever it is that they end up settling. And that does matter, but I'm not going to go, it's not a reevaluation of the contract or extension as it was signed at the time it was signed. It is, for me, it is an evaluation of that deal as it stands at this very moment.
All right, so we're just going to throw some candidates out here, talk about them, and see if we can, if not come to a consensus, at least inform each other's opinions.
Let me make one other quick note before we do it.
Okay.
We are evaluating all of this from a team-centric concept. So that means it's what it is for the team. So if you want to say, well, what about for the players? Think of it kind of in reverse. You know, if we think a contract is very bad for a team, and this will come up when we do best contracts as well, then that means we probably think it's good for the player and vice versa. Like that's so, but you think about it in that way in some ways because evaluating it from a team concept, because they have these constraints of building a team and the salary cap and the luxury tax, that's the better way of framing this discussion. Though if you want to think of it from a player-centric context, basically just reverse it.
Okay, where do you want to start here? I mean, obviously we're going to rank these in the end, but you know, we could start with some whoppers.
I think one that is worth starting on, and I don't know how highly it's going to rank, is one that we actually don't have a formal number on, and that's Damian Lillard's, because Damian Lillard, the end of his extension is so far out that, like, I remember I was helping Shams do estimates on this that we don't exactly know. So I'm using as a rough proxy that after this year, the Trailblazers owe Damian Lillard $202 million over 4 years. It could end up being even higher than that or lower than that, depending on where the cap ends up. That will be the 25-26 year is when we will be able to finally assess the final 2 years of that. And Lillard at this point, and so remember, this is 4 years after this year, Lillard is in his age 32 campaign. So this will be 33, 34, 35, and 36. And first time we get to talk about this, from a team perspective, a player option is a bad thing because you assume that the player and his agent are going to make the right decision. So if player X is actually better than that contract, they can opt out. They'll be an unrestricted free agent. They can leave if they want. Not that I expect Damian Lillard to do that.
Yeah, well, you see to it. It could also just be a vehicle where they can reduce it down, like Chris Paul, for example,
sure,
extend for a little bit longer and reduce it down and come to an agreement that's better for both sides than that would have been. But that's a rarity, too. Sometimes the guy's just going to opt in because he's not good anymore. And let's just be clear on this. Like, Damian Lillard maybe is worth his contract this year. We'll see. Like, I think if he stays healthy the rest of the year, he'll kind of be right on the borderline looking at the production. Whether it makes sense to have him on this team or not, I think the idea of it, having him continue on as a Portland legend, like, he's a good enough player, I think, that he deserves that. Whereas I would say Bradley Beal, who could come up would be on the other side of that line, where I think Lillard is just a better player. Portland has more around him and just generally has been just a more impactful player. He's gotten this team to a conference finals to where he maybe deserves this golden parachute in a way that someone like Bradley Beal doesn't. And oh, by the way, he also doesn't have a no trade clause. I mean, here's the other thing though, Danny, like I think Lillard could be traded right now for positive value on this contract.
I think so too, though some of that relies on how teams, like you only need one suitor, and trust me, it's going to come up with a name I'm going to bring up in the next 15 minutes. You only need one, but also on that point, so not saying it's gospel, Lillard is 13th right now in offensive EPM, and he's missed some time, so the sample is a little bit different, but the idea that he is one of the league's better offensive players at the moment in his age 32 season, like not only does that give you hope for how his game is going to age, and Lillard is a very capable shooter, so you have that component as well, though he is already bad at defense and will continue to get worse. But the specifics for the city, the level of play that he has right now, those are strong arguments in favor of Lillard. It being a rich contract and it likely becoming a negative value contract, but not being as negative as some of the other ones we'll discuss.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think especially because he could be traded for positive value, like he wouldn't, I don't think, be in the conversation for even if you looked at overall the history of, I mean, 6 foot guards who are 34, not to mention 36, and how much he's going to get paid. And also even the whole rising cap thing doesn't help you because he's going to be getting the absolute maximum that he can under that rising cap, whether it's 120% of what he was making previously or the max, you know, it's going to be basically whichever is smaller of those two figures. So, I mean, maybe there's a possibility the cap could go up so much that the 120% wouldn't be at the 35% max. That seems unlikely. So there's even that component where he, I think, is the only contract right now where the fact that the cap will probably go up significantly in 25, 26 is almost irrelevant. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, this one could be a total disaster in the end, but the fact that he is still a very good player right now, and there would definitely be teams interested in having him, and yeah, you deal with the rest of that contract when you deal with it, but you know, that would be, I guess maybe we should we consider, Danny, the fact that he, when did that deal get signed? Can he be traded at this deadline? I don't think he can. If that's true, then you would probably have to reduce the value down a little bit more.
Lillard signed his extension July 9th.
Okay, so he could be traded then.
No, it's a 1 year, it's designated. Oh, no, it's not.
This is the extension after the designated.
You're right. So yeah. Then, yeah, so he could be.
Ben Simmons is owed 2 years and $78 million after this season.
That's a lot fewer years, and that matters. That matters here. And Simmons, the best optimistic version of him is probably close to worth this contract. I mean, he's a capable defensive player, even if he hasn't played up to that level so far this year. And I'm, of course, like most people, more worried about the offense. But A, the defense, by and large, has not been at that level so far. And Simmons is such a specifically hard player to fit in offensively that he runs into the problem that you and I originally articulated with Russell Westbrook, which is how do you incorporate him on a good team because he is not good enough at the things he does well to justify that kind of offensive role.
Yeah, and this came up obviously when Philly was trying to trade him, and that's before we knew he was having this back surgery and these knee issues popped up again, and now he has the calf issue. And he was starting to play a little bit better, but still wasn't looking as good as he was looking at 21. And I happen to think even at that point that he was pretty overpaid, and it's just so hard to win with him. Now, if he could just give you some rim protection on defense and really play small ball center on defense, they've tried him there, but I don't think he's really been a hugely positive option, then maybe you would have something in terms of the fit. But obviously his lack of shooting, still not being too excited about going to the foul line, I think he really has lost athleticism from what we've seen so far, and I think that's hurt him on the defensive end too. So I'm not sure that Ben Simmons is even a positive player on the vast majority of teams. Like I mean, the number of games that he's played in where I think he's actually helped Brooklyn win more than just like, you know, some backup forward would have, is, you could probably say he's hurt them in more games than he's helped them, I would say, rather than just kind of a like some other just average rotational level player. So yeah, this one is way underwater. I mean, I think Ben Simmons is, the guy that, let's just say it's the guy that we saw for five games or whatever it was before he hurt himself again with the knee and slash calf. Like, what is that player worth to you?
Oof. Huh. I mean, because my big criticism with Simmons is that I don't think he's good enough in the primary action unless your team is just doesn't have another creator. Like you're really like Spursy, let's call it. Let's put it that way. If you just don't have another guy, and most of those teams aren't trying to actually win because you would have somebody better than him. And you need so much specific skill offensively outside of Simmons. So you brought the idea that he could be viable as a small ball center, and we'll see if that works defensively. But you still need four other players on the floor that can shoot to really maximize him. And so that puts a lot of pressure on your general manager, puts a lot of pressure on your coach in terms of who you're going to play. So I'm just not there.
To me, the player that he was, even during kind of the good times, is like, I guess that's like a $15 million player. I don't know. I'm not going to rule out that he can just start feeling better physically and feeling more comfortable, like he has missed a bunch of time, etc.
Yeah.
So, I wouldn't rule that out, but you could also say, hey, there's a chance this guy could just like never really be healthy and in a rhythm the entire rest of this contract.
Right. And you could, I'm sure Simmons supporters and Nets fans could lean on the Andrew Wiggins example, where Andrew Wiggins was a staple in these conversations. And then A, he improved, and B, his contract got shorter. And so that made it work better. But one of the differences is Wiggins has been significantly healthier than Ben Simmons has. And there was always this idea that if he could do X and Y, most specifically defend at a higher level, that he could be a valuable player on a good team. Both those guys actually have good positional size, but Simmons' injury history definitely scares me. And his approach, like the idea that Ben Simmons has been a really, really good basketball player for a long time and has done minimal, he has taken minimal strides. I can't talk about effort because I you don't see him in the practice gym and all that. He has taken minimal strides at the things that have been his weak points for his entire basketball life. Ben Simmons is a career 60% free throw shooter. He has never shot better than 62% in any given season.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, even though he is young, the hope is that, okay, maybe he could get back to his previously established level of performance. The idea of him cresting some new frontier is pretty much gone to me at this point. Yeah.
I want to go transition to a different, I put the three of them together. I called it the 2024 expirings division. So we look past this year, these are three players who make a lot of money, but it's only for one additional season. And that's Klay Thompson will make $43.2 million next year. Tobias Harris, $39.3 million. Gordon Hayward, $31.5 million. Which of those do you think is the most underwater?
Oh, it's got to be Hayward just because the idea of him being on the floor. I mean, at least Thompson, I know he had the Achilles and stuff, but he other than that, he hasn't had any major injuries. He hasn't had any injury issues really after the Achilles and the ACL. And Tobias Harris almost never gets hurt either. And Hayward is a good bet to play two-thirds of a season. And I also would say that Gordon Hayward, even when he's available, is the worst of those three players.
I think that's fair. Klay Thompson is in the midst of his second consecutive injury recovering season where he's been well below the league average in terms of true shooting. And when you consider that he doesn't have typically a lot of creation on there, and he's gotten different defensively. He doesn't have the ability to defend guards the way that he used to. But I wholeheartedly agree. Basically, if the difference is I have to pay an extra $12 million to have Klay Thompson instead of Gordon Hayward, even considering Klay still kind of making his way back from his twin injuries, I do that without a second's hesitation. And with Tobias Harris, I mean, I think we've gotten actually a useful example this year. Contract's still well underwater, but he can help out. Like, he can be a part of it. He's not the greatest defender. He can help out your team there. And he's not the great, he doesn't scale as much offensively as definitely the Sixers, the Colangelos hoped he would, but he can be a part of a functioning offense, which I think is also true for Hayward if he's actually, on the floor.
To be fair, it was not the Colangelos who traded for him. It was the Elton Brand.
Oh, that's Brett right.
Brown conglomerate.
That's right. I got the timing wrong. I apologize to the Colangelos, which I don't often do.
I'll give Jerry some credit for getting Team USA back on track. So, sure. Yeah, I think so. I mean, I don't. These are probably short enough at this point that I wouldn't put any of them in that category. These are, I mean, Hayward to me is the one where you're just like, I don't want to have a on my team really probably at all at anywhere close to that price. Whereas Clay, Tobias, it's like they, and particularly Clay, like he, and granted he's has more value to Golden State maybe than anywhere else, but he is has enough gravity, has enough defensive chops, can still switch on to bigger players. I think he's not just getting like complete. I think he's been a little bit better defensively this year than he was in last year's regular season, but he ended up holding up pretty well in the finals. So he still helped the team win a championship just last year. I mean, Gordon Hayward isn't even going to be on the floor for that. But yeah, I mean, I think you probably got to have to be on like, you know, I'm certainly deserving of mention, of course, but to be on this list, you got to be top five, or I'm sorry, you got to go out at least 2 years after this one.
One small note on that, and I just think this is kind of amazing. Gordon Hayward is making almost the same amount next year as Tim Hardaway Jr. will make in the two remaining seasons of his contract. You can argue about which of those structures you'd want. There's a team specific context of would you rather eat all of that in 1 year or have it in two. But, you know, it's just something I wanted to mention.
March is over, but the biggest moments in college basketball tip off the month of April. Be a part of the action on Prize Picks for both men's and women's college basketball. You can win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks as you and the world's best players take the game to a new level during basketball's postseason. You can get in on the action in more than 30 states across the country, including California, Texas, and Georgia, and win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as 4 correct picks. It's really simple to play. On America's number one fantasy sports app, you can make your picks and submit your entry in less than 60 seconds. Right now, they've got basketball, college basketball, and hockey entries available today on Prize Picks. It's exceedingly easy to make your entries. You look at the player projections, you select more or less, and you can turn $10 into $1,000 on what is, once again, America's number one fantasy sports app. Download the app today and use the code CAPSPACE. Easier to remember CAPSPACE because we talk about it all the time here on the program. For a first deposit match of up to $100, that's code CAPSPACE. For a first deposit match up to $100, pick more, pick less. It's that easy. And don't forget that CAPSPACE code to let them know you came from us. Renters, you ever feel like you're stuck in this loop of rent payments, just watching your money vanish into thin air? It's time to turn that rent game around and start earning some serious rewards. That's where Built Rewards comes in. Built is breaking ground as the first rewards program that hooks you up with points on your rent. Even if you're still rocking the old school rent check vibes, Built Rewards has got your back. They'll mail the check for you. It's like having a personal rent paying assistant. Every month, pay your rent and watch the Built points roll in. Use points to jet off on a dream vacation. Put your points towards a flight or hotel stay with 500 plus airlines and 700,000 plus hotels and properties. You can also use your points towards a future rent payment or towards a future down payment on a home. Pay rent hassle-free through the Built Rewards app. Your rent game just got a major upgrade. Earn points by paying rent right now when you go to joinbuilt.com/capspace. That's joinbuilt, B-I-L-T, joinbuilt.com/capspace. Don't forget that /capspace URL.
I'll go to another player, and one who's harder to evaluate. I don't think we'll spend as much time on him. Rudy Gobert just got traded for an absolute ton of positive value, but after this year, owed $130.5 million over 3 years. He does have a player option for that third year. And Gobert not playing up to his full defensive standard, how some of that might blame probably goes on his Timberwolves teammates and everything else. But we're getting a clear indication of Gobert's offensive limitations and the idea that he can be that maximal defensive player of the year type of guy as he's aging, as he's getting into his 30s. It's possible, but the certainty of it is getting more faint.
Yeah, Dan noted this today. Tim Connelly is saying, yeah, I've been on Rudy, but his block rate is low. It's like, well, you know, it's not something where it's like, okay, if you wanted to like go crazy going out of position to block more shots, like, but, and even last year, you know, you were on this more than me about him slipping. I didn't feel that way when you looked at the overall team concept, at least last year. But I mean, clearly he hasn't been the difference maker that they hoped. I mean, he's still doing some good stuff, but teams are also shooting a much higher percentage against him at the rim than normal. And, you know, again, it's not like the Wolves have terrible personnel around him. It's at least not compared to like last year's Jazz, for example. So I do think he slipped. That's what you would expect. There are very, very few players when you look at the history. I mean, because he's being, if he's not a defensive player of the year level of player, he's like drops down to being like a $20 million a year player. You know, if he's just going to be Clint Capella, well, that's what Clint Capella gets paid. So you're $20 million underwater. And, you know, it could even get to the point where he's not even Clint Capella a couple of years from now. And his offense looks just as bad as ever, if not worse. And so I'm not going to say he's a bad player. I think maybe on the right team, he could still be worth this contract for this year that we are currently in. But I mean, that's what was so remarkable about this trade. It was like, this was in the aggregate, not a great contract. And this wasn't a team that we felt like was in the win now type of mode, at least not if you're being realistic, to where they could take advantage of the quote unquote good years on the contract. So yeah, this one's going to be right up there for me, I think, especially because they're just, once you get beyond age 31, 32, and there just aren't guys who are playing at a defensive player of the year type of level. You really would struggle to go back into history to find players like that who, I mean, there's Bill Russell. I mean, Draymond's looking like he might get there. You know, KG, it's like, and Gobert is a very, very good defensive player, but there are not many examples in history of a guy who would live up to this contract in the defensive end.
Here's another way of phrasing it. Gobert is making in the $40 million plus range over the next 3 years of this contract. You know, I think the median on it is like 43. Lillard's median is higher than that, but it's like 40. I think it's like 47. I'm significantly more confident based on their skill sets and sizes that Lillard will be a productive player in some form in, let's say, 24, 25, when they're both under contract, then Gobert. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think you're probably right about that. Yeah. I mean, Rudy at least has maybe is better in terms of health than Lillard at this point. And so, and like size generally ages a little bit better, but so does shooting. So yeah, I think that's probably right. And, you know, Lillard has the additional year, and also the last two of these years will be in the like mid 50s instead of 40 million. Like we gotta remember it, right? It's like, it basically, the way it's been the last few years, it's like, all right, over 35 million, it's like, whatever. But it's like, no, we're gonna have like, there's gonna be a huge difference between 35 million and like 55 million with some of these deals. Yeah, but Rudy's got to be right up there for sure. Bradley Beal is another one where now he has been playing more efficiently this season, and he's also at an age where you don't expect a major drop off right away. But the history of contracts like this at 35% of the cap over 5 years. Oh, by the way, no trade clause, which I'm sure was part of why he should be nominated there. And, you know, he's averaging 23 points a game, shooting 35% from three, free throw attempts per game, way down still, though. And he's playing, I think, more within the team concept, playing better defensively, shooting well from two at 59%. That would be a career high by almost 5% on two-point shooting. But he also hasn't necessarily, you know, the Wizards haven't been this unbelievable offense this year. He hasn't been, I think his usage has been, you know, more in the 27 or so range so far this year. So that's been a big decline from where he was the last few years. But we're talking about a guy who's, even right now, I would say is like maybe the 25th best player in the NBA if you're, you know, like very low level all-star. And so these 35% of the cap plus player option plus no trade clause for that kind of a player, it would just be pretty surprising if this didn't become one of the worst contracts in the NBA on a year-to-year basis very quickly.
Beal is not there now, but he I'm expecting in the next couple of years will enter the rarefied era of a player who has simultaneously a no trade clause and a NOAA trade clause. That for those who haven't listened long enough, that's a player who doesn't have a no trade clause, but his contract is so bad that it's very hard to trade him. And Wizards fans should be more familiar than almost anybody that that being untradeable is a temporary condition, and B, there are almost always worse contracts because of that Rashard Lewis. That was Rashard and Gilbert Arenas, right? Like that was
or John Wall and Russell Westbrook for that matter.
Yeah,
like the Wizards have been involved in a lot of these. You go back to like Juwan Howard and Mitch Richmond and like the early Michael Jordan GM era.
Well, and the other reason why this is very high on the list is because of that no trade clause, because that means Beal wields so much more control. Remember, we're doing this from a team perspective over the process than every single other player on this list. And you could theoretically, you could have a deal in place. And also he can wield that in a lot of different ways. It could be, I want to go to this team. I'm not going to accept a trade anywhere else. And so that makes it even more damaging for the Wizards.
All right, your turn.
I don't think he's going to make my final list, and it's super depressing. It's part of why he's not. But Lonzo Ball getting over $20 million a year for another 2 years, technically the final year is a player option, when we have no idea if he's going to play or how much.
I mean, is he headed for a long-term injury exclusion? Like, it almost feels like that at this point.
We got that word from Billy Donovan earlier this week that like he's not even close to the next step in his process. Now, Ball being owed $42 million after this year, like that's just not relative to some of these contracts. That's not that much money. But what you're going to get from him is sadly likely a lot less. So like, for example, you compare Lonzo Ball to Tim Hardaway Jr., like at least Tim Hardaway Jr. is going to be on the floor for your team.
Yeah, I'm trying to decide who I would rather. I might still rather have Lonzo Ball just on the opportunity, because I think Hardaway Jr., you could find a replacement for him so easily that Lonzo Ball, I almost would rather just say, all right, there's only a 50% chance he's going to come back, but I'll just take that because he's really just so much work of a contributor.
Like, Lonzo last year was so much better than Tim Hardaway has been any recent season when he was healthy.
All right, let's do some quick hitters here that won't obviously be considered, but you got Evan Fournier, 1 year, $18.9 million after this year, not even in the rotation. There's a team option, which I think whatever team he's on might decline by the end of there. You've got, this is one that's very interesting. I think this guy could still be traded for semi-positive value, but this is one of those ones where he's an incredibly terrible contract on the team he's on, but actually would probably be like whatever fine on another team. That's James Wiseman.
Yeah, I mean, Wiseman so owed $12.1 million for next year, and theoretically that team would also, if they wanted to and extended qualifying offer, get restricted rights. It's very rare for a rookie-scale player to even be considered for this. I think Wiseman deserves consideration, but not serious placement.
He could be pretty valuable for Oklahoma City this year.
Sure. Our old friend Marvin Bagley III, $25 million remaining over 2 years after this year. That's distinctly not great.
Yeah, and just again about him, like he's just doesn't have a position really. They're doing like this too big thing with him now, but he can't be a drop center. He can't switch. He is not quick enough. You know, so there's not really like a defensive scheme he could fit in. He hasn't shot the ball well enough to play the four offensively. So he really is just a backup rim running center who you're just trying to survive with him defensively. He can't be a starter. So again, not one that's just going to kill you, but it's also that's more in the like all asinine decision rather than just flat out worst contracts.
While we're on that, Davis Bertans is owed a relatively similar $22 million in guaranteed money after this year, $17 million for 23-24, and then a partial guarantee worth $5 million for 24-25. And that's not great. It's not going to be in the worst contracts, but it's there. And then I'm still more of a Rashawn Holmes believer, but $25 million over the next 2 years, second-year player option for a guy who is now out of the rotation in Sacramento.
Yeah, and he wasn't playing well either, and he didn't play well last year. The player that he was 2 years ago obviously would have been worth this, but I think the fact that he's being outplayed by Trey Lyles and Chimezie Metu, that tells you all you need to know about where he is at this point. Now, the Kings, they've leaned into more of just a spacing type of system. They're not really doing a lot of just pure role man type of stuff like Holmes, but he really fell off, I thought, defensively last year as well. So, yeah, I mean, this is a tough one. I mean, it's hard to say that he's any better than Bagley at this point. I mean, maybe there's just, except for the slight chance that he could maybe rehabilitate. How old is he? He's like 28?
Holmes is 29.
Okay. What else is kind of in this category of like... You know, just annoying to have around and couldn't be traded for positive value, but not going to kill you.
Landry Shamet. I mean, Shamet owed $10 million a year for this year and next year, then two non-guaranteed seasons. I wonder where that's going to go. And Shamet deserves special honor. We don't do this as a part of this podcast for being the least, maybe the least defensible contract when it was signed of anybody in this entire conversation, where it was just, he wasn't that good of a player then. The Suns didn't need him. They actually gave up positive value to get him. James Jones has done a very good job. This is not a piece of that very good job.
Well, and actually, I think on a different team, he could be more useful. He's back up to 39% from three now, 59% true shooting, but he's going to, and he has the highest usage of his career as well. Highest turnovers also because they've had been so limited at the guard position, but he struggled to stay healthy in his career as well. That's been an issue for him, but on another team, you know, he would be Grayson Allen. Like, those guys are very similar. I was more just critical of those particular teams acquiring them and signing them to the contracts that they did. You know, I would say Shamet on just some piddling team as a backup shooting guard, like, you know, fourth guard. All right, he's overpaid by $4 million or something like that, but nothing terrible. It's just on this team, it never made sense to have him because he can't defend in the playoffs.
We can throw in a similar boat, Doug McDermott, $14 million basically for next year, and he, you know, it's not a positive value contract, but it's insufficiently negative. I wanted to ask you, so there are some juicier, rich contracts for players that I don't think are in here now, but I'm wondering if you're getting closer to putting any of them in this worst contract. And I think the place to start there is with Jimmy Butler. He's, you know, he's doing well when he's been on the floor this year, but owed $146 million over the next 3 years, not this year, 3 years after that, final year player option. That's a lot of money for anyone who's his age, even if Jimmy Butler is producing right now.
Yeah, I mean, this is, he's never going to play more than 60 games in a season going forward, but obviously could still be traded for positive.
Right, and for me, he's such a good 16-game player. The playoffs he had last year, like, you can't put him on this list yet. There may be a time, but that time is not now.
No, we could see him on this list 2 years from now, absolutely, but that's after you've gotten the 2 years. And he still is a very, very effective player. To me, this list starts with CJ McCollum, where they gave him this extension when he had 2 years left on his contract, this 2 year extension. So now it's 3 for 100 basically after this year. CJ McCollum has a 48% true shooting this season. And yeah, he was getting back from some illness struggle. He's played 20 games. That's not a completely insubstantial sample size. And you know, he's passing a little bit more, but he's not really a pure point guard. He takes threes, but he's not just like an unbelievable, like, off ball type of shooting threat. He would like to get to his mid range jumper. And I think he's obviously going to be better this year going forward, but his shooting at the rim has really declined so far this year, down to 54% and 33% from three. So, I mean, I think that's going to go back up. He's never been worse than 38% over a full season from three. And his long two-point shooting is also way off. So I think he's going to get there. But we're talking about someone who could be in your, like, 53% true shooting type of level. I mean, 48% true shooting, that's 9 percentage points below the league average at this point for a guy who doesn't really help you on defense.
Well, and the reason that CJ deserves consideration in this is that, like Bradley Beal, who is paid a lot more money, obviously, I don't think McCollum at this point is good enough offensively to be your best offensive player if you have real aspirations. And it's fortunate for the Pelicans that he doesn't have to be. They have Zion Williamson. They have Brandon Ingram. Ingram. And so CJ can settle in as more of a complimentary player. But paying a complimentary player who is already in his 30s, this kind of money, paying him $35 million next year, $33.3 million in 24-25, and $30.7 million in 25-26. Yeah. Good.
It does decline, at least. That's helpful.
Yes. Yeah. As will CJ, yeah. Presumably.
If he hadn't had, you're talking about 32, 33, and 34 for a guy who's never been an all-star. And yeah, the cap's going up like that last year. Maybe it won't be as bad. And he adds some leadership elements. He's helped legitimize the franchise. Seems like he's helpful in getting Zion Williamson back on the path. Now, he did all those things before they extended him. They did with 2 years left on his deal. Like, I'm not sure why exactly they had to do that. He also, I think he can't be traded until next year. Not that they're going to do that anyway. So, and he didn't have a great playoffs last year either. We'll see on this one. Like, he could, if he gets, obviously, if he plays at the level that he played at last year for this year and then three more years, but that's probably not realistic. And so we'll have to see. Maybe he could just evolve into more of a spot up guy playing off of Zion, and that's where he can get some value. Like, I think he's going to play hard. He's going to do his best to figure it out. You know, he's a really high character guy. So it's hard for me to put this quite in the top five yet. But I think of all these ones where it's like we could look back at the end of this season and be like, oh my God, what did they just pay this guy, $35 million for this year? And, you know, he was really bad this year, and now he's got three more years left. Like, that's could be rough.
It could be. Two recent rookie scale extensions that I want to talk about, I'm not sure where they'll fit in, are DeAndre Hunter and RJ Barrett. Barrett making $107 million over the 4 years after this year. Hunter, $90 million. And our friend John Hollinger framed this well when talking about Hunter's extension, basically that with the new money that's coming in, it was hard to create a negative value contract for a player as young, because remember, rookie scale players, they're always young. This is the age 25 season for DeAndre Hunter. And I think of Hunter's contract, even though it's much smaller.
What did he say? It's hard, but not impossible to give out a bad contract on a rookie extension.
And so with Hunter, the question that I've been grappling with is, like, yeah, he's dealt with health issues and forwards are incredibly valuable, but it's like, how long has he played at a full-on starter level? And he can, and the hope for the Hawks is that he will. So I think it's a negative value contract. I don't think it's deep enough underwater, though.
Yeah, and he still has the ability. He's shown he has played at a level at times, like for short periods, of course. But, you know, start of the 21 season, the series against the Heat, to where he's shown enough potential to justify and maybe even exceed this contract. Also, seeing how much they're struggling without him, yeah, he's not some unbelievably great shakes, and he's not so good defensively. He takes too many twos, and it doesn't finish well at the rim, or even get there. And all, we're well aware of all the flaws in his game, but he's at least a body at that position. And when you don't have a body at that position, we're finding out what that's like for the Hawks since he's been out, that they've really looked terrible. So that's at least a guy who's like, all right, we could throw him on these good wings as like a credible threat. He's not going to get totally overwhelmed. He's not going to just get totally left open on the other side like that. He's never, I guess what I'd say is it's like, it's going to be tough for him to be worth just like so much less than the $20 million.
Agreed. And because of the positional scarcity, he benefits from that. And then with RJ, he's having a rough start to the year, but I think he's a better player than he has been so far, and he can continue to improve. Seems like a hard worker. So I'm not, but, you know, I think there's a distinct chance that a year or two from now, we're looking at him going, yeah, I bet they wish they didn't have him at that kind of price.
So I will be honest, I tend to pack on the pounds a little bit during the winter, holiday season, not getting outside as much. So in springtime, I try to eat healthier, and I'm really excited to try Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Each meal is fresh, never frozen, chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. This is going to be fantastic for me during the playoffs, when a lot of times I feel like I don't have time to eat healthy, and now I can choose from a number of their delicious but healthy options. I like to go keto. On occasion, they have that. They have vegan and veggie options as well. Here's what they've got for their keto weekly menu this week. Sun-dried tomato chicken with zucchini noodles, spicy poblano beef bowl with roasted broccoli,
chicken piccata with cauliflower mashed and broccoli, or if you want to go to their Chef's Choice weekly menu, jalapeno lime cheddar chicken. That sounds fantastic. Greek lemon chicken with roasted potatoes. This all sounds really, really good. Eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, cleaning up, heat, and savor the good stuff. And they're also celebrating Earth Day all month long as well. Look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for their lowest carbon footprint meals. Head to factormeals.com/dunked50, special code for this one. That's factormeals.com/dunked50 and use the code dunked50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. That's code dunked50 at factormeals.com/dunked50. 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Oh, it is that time again. Wedding season. Indochino's custom suits will have you walking into a wedding looking like $1 million, feeling like $1 million, because their suits are custom made to fit you perfectly. You can get a tailored fit from the comfort of your home. You can set up your measurement profile on Indochino's website, choose customizations without even leaving the house. Indochino was the official outfitter of my wedding. I got a tux from them. All my groomsmen got custom fitted sport jackets, and I'd like to think we all look great. Order your custom suit now. Be ready for wedding season, whether it's at home or in person at a showroom near you, which I actually recommend. That's what I did. An Indochino style guide can walk you through all of the amazing customizations that they have. The lapels, the lining, single-breasted, double-breasted. You can feel the fabrics in person. That's definitely the best way to do it, in my opinion. But you can also do it from home as well. Look your best this wedding season at the table or on the dance floor when you wear Indochino. Go to Indochino.com. Use that familiar cap space code to get 10% off any purchase of $399 or more. That's Indochino.com. I-N-D-O-C-H-I-N-O. Indochino.com. Don't forget that cap space code to let them know you came from us.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of these contracts, which again, these big extensions are making this so hard because there aren't that many guys who are like, man, they are bad now and they're like basically never going to play again. Like, there, you don't have your John Walls, your Blake Griffins from like 3 years ago. Like, there isn't really anyone out there.
Yes, this is
at that level right now.
This is the best worst contract list I think I've ever recall doing.
Yeah, so we're kind of having to project out a little bit more than we normally would. I mean, the number of guys who are just like, wow, this guy sucks and he's making $30 million, there are very few of those. It's just like, okay, the normal progression is they're going to, if you follow this out, they're not going to be worth that. And now some of those have turned out to be right. Like, we had Russell Westbrook, who even got traded for positive value, I think, back in 2020 as like actually on this list at the time because he got traded for Chris Paul, who was thought to be even worse, which of course was completely wrong. And also someone like Chris Paul, like a guy who's had that level of performance, can potentially get back to that at times too. So yeah, I mean, I guess that's maybe previewing who I might have as the worst contract in the NBA, of just to find the player who is making this much money and is actually just actively bad right now. Like, there really aren't too many of those. Is there anyone else who falls into that category? I don't really, well, okay, so maybe there is. Zach LaVine. I don't know if he's actively bad right now, but he can't do anything inside the arc. He can't finish. He was 1 of 6 at the rim last night, even though he can get hot from the outside, but he's also a bad defender. So this is one where he's just starting a 5-year deal and he's well overpaid even this year. And your just hope is like, well, he had knee surgery, so he's going to get better. But that's kind of like a 50-50 proposition. And we're pretty far into the season. And the other thing too is it's like he had this knee soreness, like not playing back-to-backs early in the season in camp that came out of nowhere. So it seems like whatever knee issues he had, the surgery didn't completely fix them. And if he had had no issue, he'd be like, okay, you know, he's working his way back from the surgery, he's getting better and better. But yeah, I mean, I given the way he's played and some of the issues that he's had in terms of missing time, not being able to play back to bats, etc., that's concerning. Like,
it's concerning. And on top of that, not only because LaVine is 27 now, and so the idea that it's going to take him time were he to become the guy that he was, but that best iteration of Zach LaVine was a very positive player, but to me wasn't like an all NBA guy. And so you're not waiting on top 10, top 15 player in the league. You're waiting on top 25.
And, yeah, and so, again, the same thing, even the history, and now he was younger than a lot of these guys, you know, who maybe were getting this contract at like 29 and 27, but the history of guys at his level, even guys who are at sort of like a third team All-NBA level, getting the 30% max on their third contract is poor. And the cap is going up, but as you noted, Zach wasn't even quite at that level, and he also has the injury risk.
Injury present. It's not even a risk. It's there already. And I blame that for part of his struggles so far. And so Levine is, he's there. And then I will just mention briefly, there are a number of players who we hope never make it for this list, but because of their injury risk, I just want to mention that they could make it later on. That group includes Zion Williamson. We don't really know the full protections in his contract yet. Joel Embiid, Michael Porter.
I think we can assume, though, that those protections aren't going to bail the team out unless he's like missing entire seasons.
My theory is it's going to be like Embiid, where you have to cut him entirely and like multiple years in advance to get that at some point. So we don't know for sure. And like Michael Porter Jr. has a partial guarantee on that last year. I can't remember if there's a trigger on it. And Embiid, like all those guys, if they're healthy, no questions asked.
But that's a question on Porter Jr. If he is the way he played this year when healthy, though he's now missed time with this nebulous heel issue since then, but the way he's played this year, you feel like he's worth that contract, that he just continued that level of play?
I mean, so he's making 43% of his threes, but he's way less efficient from two than he was in those best years.
Yeah, the dunks are way lower.
I think he's if you assumed reasonable health, but just this level of play, I think he's about neutral, maybe slight negative.
Yeah, so his last healthy season, he had 75 dunks in 61 games, and this season he has 5 dunks in 16 games.
Right, or if you want to think about it this way, it was 9.5% of the field goals he took versus 2.4 so far this year.
Worth noting that he's played basically more of the 3 on offense and played more of the 4 his last healthy year, but that's not enough to result in that discrepancy. And 2-point shooting last healthy year was 63%. It's 51% this year. So, yeah, I mean, he's kind of like, you know, 6'10", great 3-point shooter, but he's not doing a ton else. Let's see if there's anything else that pops out for you. Yeah, offensive rebounding was higher before as well. Although, again, that's a little bit playing with Aaron Gordon now. And just can't, he doesn't have the ability to maybe get the usage up much beyond the 22% that he's at right now. And I think he's enough of an injury risk that it's hard to see him really improving a ton. And I think he's always going to be on kind of the maintenance plan. Like, it was good to see him shooting the ball well, which he wasn't obviously before the back injury, but he is not the same athletically, I would say, as 2 years ago. He's only 24, so it shouldn't be at a time where he's naturally going to drop off that much.
Nate, I'll give you the choice on whether we do this before or after, but I created a category for this of players that could sign contracts in the next 12 months that will eventually make this list. Would you rather do our top 5 and then do that, or would you rather do that first?
Maybe we should save that one for another time, because I think we may be running out of time here. But
let's do our top 5
3 minutes in. Is there anyone else that needed to get mentioned here, just as like possibilities?
I mean, you and I have been frustrated by Tim Hardaway Jr.'s contract, $34 million after this year, over 2 years, and he has a replaceable skill set. He's made more threes over the last like 6 games or so, but he's
now that he's starting, that it seems like it's been better. Yusuf Nurkic is one where he's probably overpaid by like a couple million right now, but that could fall off. You actually mentioned in our prep here Kawhi Leonard, and you know, he is due basically $95 million over the next 2 years after this one with a player option. And that's, at some point, I'd like to see him like play 10 games in a row, or even 10 games,
10 games
back to backs in a row. Yeah, exactly. And hasn't looked amazing when he's been available. You know, the big guard contracts, Hero, Poole, Sexton is low enough to me that he shouldn't be in this conversation. But Poole and Hero, you know, 4 for $120. Poole is Hero, 4 for $123 guaranteed with some reachable incentives, maybe into the 126 or so range for Poole. Hero's been hurt again, and it's taken a little bit of a step forward. Poole, it's It's just tough. But it's too early to say on those. Like, I don't think either of those were like seemed crazy at the time, and I'm not going to ring the alarm after 20 games of this season for those guys. But
they're also They're also young enough that it's not like the aging isn't going to kill those contracts. It could be their own play, of course, just like it is for other players. But it's not going to be like you don't have the same fears. You have different fears.
LeBron could fall off at any time. He's sure. Making $50 million each of the next 2 years. That's just one to keep an eye on. Obviously, it's not the case right now. Joel Embiid, his supermax doesn't kick in until next season, and then it's 4 years after that for at basically $50 million a year with a player option. I get it. Like the thing about Joel though is like it's really been more the nagging stuff. Like he hasn't had any major injuries since his rookie year, so I think it's going to be okay. He's still pretty big. I wonder maybe more about his defense. Doesn't keep himself in amazing shape. So just want to kind of keep an eye on here. And yeah, all right, let's do our top five here.
As much as it hurts my heart, I'm going to have Lonzo Ball at fifth just because I'm concerned that he's not going to play at all. And if he's healthy, I think he's positive value on this contract. But the idea that he's not, so it's $42 million over the next 2 years.
See, I think if he's not going to play at all, then they could just get a long-term injury exclusion for him, and it's not that bad. Like, I think that possibility, because, and then I think if he plays...
I generally don't consider that, but that is an interesting argument.
Yeah, if he plays, I think he'll at least give you something.
Okay, I respect that.
That's my hope. Okay, so that's your number. So we're going 5-1. I find it easier.
Or do you want to go? Or do you want to start at one?
I just find it easier to do it that way personally.
Okay, sure.
Because there's also like a clear number one to me, and that's Ben Simmons.
Oh, see, I have Bradley Beal at number one.
Yeah, it's just that like Simmons is the only one that he's got the trifecta of being ineffective right now, being an injury risk, and having a huge contract. Like, I mean, it's pretty obvious. Like, if you tried to trade Bradley Beal or Ben Simmons, like, yeah, there's still, even if it was Bradley Beal with the no trade clause, like, if he wanted to be traded and you could only trade him to one team, you would still get positive value for him.
But I see it differently than other teams do. I mean, it's the same, you know, players that we've had on this list have gotten traded for positive value before. I don't see it. I'm not trying to calibrate on the rest of the league. I'm trying to calibrate on me. And okay. Beal's owed so much more money for so much longer, and he's a lot older, that I have Simmons too. Like, this isn't, we don't have them far apart. But the other part for Simmons is I think he's been a lot worse so far this season than I expect him to be overall. And so he's flawed and he's not a great part of a great team. And Beal actually has a better complementary skill set for a better squad. But my inclination is that he'll age out of that at least a little bit. Beal is a very limited defender, and the overall contract and the no trade clause.
Like, I wouldn't say Beal is a very limited defender. I think he's actually been better this year. Like he'll switch on to guys at the end of games and like be credible. Like I think with on a good team, I think he would be totally fine.
It's so rare. I mean, with him, like I think he could step it up for moments, but like, game to game, possession to possession, I don't believe in his defense. Do you have Beal second?
But one last thing I want to say, I guess we have a difference in philosophy then, which is surprising that this is just coming out now, like our seventh year of doing this. But yeah, to me, the fact that he could be traded for positive value, it's like, so you're viewing it more of just like, hey, you're stuck with this contract, and what is the difference between the production this player is going to do? But to me, if you can be spared of the consequences of that by being able to move him for positive value whenever you want to, like that mitigates it.
If the idea, I mean, to me, the idea of that is that the other team is making a mistake. Like, this is my evaluation of the player. Like, then your argument is because one general manager, Rob Pelinka, made a stupid decision with Russell Westbrook, his contract isn't that bad. No, it was bad. It was just that Rob Pelinka is bad at his job.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's reasonable. I think it's there's maybe a difference in evaluating the decision to give the player the contract versus just how it compares.
And I will say Beal's
production
is not nearly as egregious to me as Westbrook's was at the time Pelinka traded. Like, sure, this is not, where, as I said, this is the least bad, worst contracts I think we've ever done.
Yeah, but I'm going to go with Ben Simmons because he's making like $40 million a year and he's not good. So for 2 years, that's he's the only player who's making above $30 million for 2 years after this one. And he's bad right now, and he has an injury, and who knows, a mental approach risk. And he's also impossible to fit around, even if he does play to whatever people think his level is. So, yeah, I would go Simmons. You're going to be, who's your number two?
Simmons is my number two for basically the reasons you articulated. And I think it's probably closer for me than it is for you. It seemed like you had Simmons in a tier by himself. But the way that he fits so poorly on a lot of teams is a major consideration for me. If his contract was longer, he would be number one. But I think you can live with two more years. It doesn't, it hamstrings your team, doesn't hamstring it forever. But I'm very interested in, interested in your next one, whether it's your number two or like kind of whether your number two is Beal or whether it's someone else.
I'm going to go with Zach LaVine.
Okay.
I think it's, as we mentioned, I think he would have been right on the borderline of being overpaid this season at the 30% max, even at the level that he had been at before. He's well below that level now. The athletic markers, watching him, everything that you would be looking at indicates that he's having issues. The fact that he's already had two surgeries on this knee, the fact that he all of a sudden was just missing games at the start of the season due to the surgery. So, I think there's a very good chance this was going to be a bad contract by the end, even if he just was back to his normal level this year. And I'm just think there's a more likely than not chance that he never gets back to his size, which is sad because I thought he was actually even a slightly underrated player at his best, even at the start of last year before the issues started. But I mean, and this final year player option, like this is going out more than $40 million a year. This is a tough contract, and maybe people won't realize it yet. I think part of this is me making the bet that he's just not going to get back to where he was the last couple of years. If he did that, then maybe he would be, kind of in the 6 or 7 range or something. But I mean, I just fear this is going to never really get there, and that he's just going to be a average shooting guard, maybe. When you consider his defense,
you've convinced me to move. So I had LaVine fourth. I'm moving him to third. In part because, like, one of the weird things about the Bulls last year is that DeMar DeRozan was meaningfully better than Zach LaVine, and they were both a part of the success. But I mean, what's not like LaVine was the best part of what went well for Chicago. The Bulls were significantly better in the DeRozan only minutes than the LaVine only minutes. DeRozan was their crunch time king. And so LaVine doesn't have positional versatility on defense. I don't think he's a good enough shooter for his game to age like incredibly well. Like the idea of, well, what will reduced athleticism do for him? He's still a good shooter, but like the idea that he'll just, age into like what Lillard, for example. Like I think that will work better. LaVine significantly younger than Damian Lillard.
But I think Lillard, to me, and we'll have to see where he's at after this full season, right? Like he could struggle through an injury marred campaign and never fully ramp up to the level he was at a couple years. I mean, he's had some huge games this year, so he has it in him, but maybe you just can't catch that consistently. But I think Damian Lillard is a player who, if he got traded this year, could swing a championship. Whereas I don't think that the other guys who I'm going to be mentioning here are that. So Lillard is not on my list right now.
He is not on mine either.
I just have a lot of respect for him. And hey, if we get to the end of the year and it's like it's not looking good, he'll be very prominently featured next year, I'm guessing.
I'm in the same boat. So you do you have LaVine second or do you have him third?
I have him second.
Okay.
And my number three, this is another one where maybe I'm just overrating what we're seeing so far here. I actually go with CJ McCollum, number three.
Oh wow. Okay. He was my six, I guess you could say. I was choosing between CJ and Lonzo.
Yeah.
And we already kind of went through the logic there. It's that he's, McCollum's not an all-star level player now, hasn't really been, and we expect him to go down from this point, owed a lot of money.
Yeah. And another guy who's just a tough fit to some degree as well. Not a great passer, not a good defensive player. That's only going to get worse. I mean, I do value the intangibles with him to some degree, but and maybe that's why I don't feel great about this. But I mean, we thought that the extension that he was given out in 2019 was bad, and I think he was probably even slightly below water on that. And now, again, for 32, 33, 34, over $30 million a year for him, it is declining. That helps a little bit, but not a ton. And maybe he'll prove me wrong, or maybe he'll just have some like great playoff moments this year, and that will make this all worth it. But I'm very scared with how he's been playing right now.
Speaking of very scared with how he's playing right now, my number four is Rudy Gobert. And the idea that he can be better than he has played so far is definitely present for me, but Gobert making over $40 million a year for an additional 3 years with a player option on that last one and not quite having that defensive player of the year level right now, and I think he will continue to deteriorate over the years of this contract and being extremely offensively limited, it's very concerning. And he can, the idea that he's not a heliocentric defensive player potentially at this point, and I could feel this might just be an overreaction. I acknowledge that possibility, but there actually aren't that many players making this kind of money who I'm as scared about right now, though there are others who could join him very soon.
I think that's fair. I had Gobert at number five. And the other thing, too, is I think particularly as his mobility wanes, that he just can't be the type of player where, yeah, he's overpaid, but he's going to put you over the top into championship contention. Like, I think this move to Minnesota has kind of shown that that's not necessarily in him anymore. I think there's a time where it might have been on the right team, and he just didn't have the right team around him. But I think particularly with his offensive limitations, where his style just doesn't work as well in the playoffs, and I think also he's not going to be nearly as good at switching onto other players and guarding in isolation as he was in the past as time goes on. So he was my number five, and then I had Beal as my four.
Okay.
All right, well, I'm not going to say this was fun, but I think it was illuminating. I guess it's, if you're going to criticize anyone, I think when you can take your $130 million remaining on your contract over 3 years to the bank, they could probably take it. I guess that's
so these
true.
People are all very, very good in their chosen field and have been properly compensated for it. I'm sure they're okay.
Yes. And also, no one listens to us, so it's fine. It's not, this is not going to get back to one of these players. So don't worry about it. I love when fans treat one of my tweets as if I have specifically just used a bullhorn to yell it into their poor young player's ear and get all bent out of shape about how mean I am. All right, this is fun. There you go. You happy about that? And we'll talk to you all again tomorrow to wrap out the week.
Doers, mowing season is here. With Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, you can get gas-like power with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower for just $329. With a runtime of nearly an hour, it's the perfect mower to tackle your half-acre lawn without a trip to the gas station. Just push and mow. Your grass won't wait, so buy it online and pick it up in-store to get out there sooner. Get gas-like power this spring with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower just $329 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.